on KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
We are with the city of Albuquerque's Monica Jamka, Elizabeth Holguin, and Christina Pajaron. Did I say it right?
Parajon.
I'm going to get it better. I'm going to get better and better. Monica was on with us before. And we're going to talk today about homelessness. And it's kind of an amazing thing that we're talking about this. And I so admire you ladies for being here. Because yesterday I had Carla Sontag with the New Mexico Business Coalition expressing all kinds of concerns about some of the city things going on. So thank you so much for coming and giving the city's perspective. It's going to be great.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good stuff. Let me frame this a little bit. Homelessness and its causes are a major concern for all New Mexico. Obviously, we're all seeing all kinds of things going on. Yesterday, as I mentioned, Carla Sontag with the New Mexico Business Coalition joined the show to talk about why her organization opposes the two proposals currently before the city council that amend the city's zoning codes to allow government-sanctioned homeless tent encampments throughout the city. Living spaces and safe outdoor spaces, I guess, is what they've been kind of named. Carla also asked the question of why the new Gateway Center has not yet opened. And as you were putting these topics together and sending them to me, you literally were framing me everything I needed to know. So I view that as a God thing, because it's just good that we're going to get your perspective today. So let's start here. Dr. Holguin, what's the framework of the city's approach to homelessness?
Sure, Jim. Thanks for asking. So we believe in the city that the homeless crisis response is really multifaceted. So we have a multi-pronged approach to be able to address needs all along the spectrum. And I'm glad you touched on the safe outdoor spaces, which is one solution, not the solution, but I know we'll be talking about that more on June 15th. Mm-hmm. So we start with prevention and diversion. And we try to do things like eviction prevention. We've saved 1,159 households from being, from being evictive and in the form of supportive housing vouchers.
Can I interrupt right there?
Yeah.
My question is, are some people being evicted because they're not aware this help is available?
I understand perhaps, people
are being evicted for various reasons.
We're doing a lot with eviction, like some landlord mitigation and things like that, where there's a lot of discrimination going on. So there is definitely lots of reasons, and we're trying to address a few major ones.
And you have, for example, a free legal eviction clinic where people can get free legal advice. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to sign up by the 20th, right?
That's right, yes. And that's happening on the 25th of May.
And the 25th. And it's free. And you're going to get a chance to talk to attorneys.
That's right.
About that.
Another concern is rising rents, as we see all across the nation. Albuquerque is not immune. So people that are on fixed incomes, that are in affordable units, are now maybe realizing that the units are not so affordable as agreements come up for renewal.
Right.
But back to the framework, we have a lot of housing assistance, and we use a coordinated entry system, which is a national system that HUD requires. So that's people's sort of entry point into getting into the system to get rapid rehousing or permanent supportive housing assistance. We do lots of outreach. We fund different outreach programs where people can go to find people that are on the streets or in encampments and help them get connected to case management and housing and other services like rehabilitation if needed.
Could volunteers with churches help you with that outreach?
That is a great question.
Well, and I don't know if they would have the expertise, but maybe they could bring the people to you. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean the positions that we have are in organizations. They're hired positions. They have to go through a lot of training.
Okay.
But I like that idea, and I think we should explore that further.
Right.
And there are, I'll just quickly jump in, a lot of volunteer opportunities through the CABQ website. So if folks are interested in a variety of topics, they can directly go to cabq.gov/volunteers and do some searching and see what kind of critical needs are available right now for volunteer work.
I think, Monica, I need to challenge our listeners a little bit. So many of our listeners are very giving, very charitable, but they might think about serving Christian organizations. And I'm going to challenge you that maybe you need to volunteer for a city organization. Mm-hmm. And just love on people. Yep. And try to do the best for them. That's another opportunity.
That's right.
Would you agree with that?
Definitely.
I think serving anyone is serving the Lord. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, how big is this problem? What does the data say about homelessness in Albuquerque?
Well, on any given night, we know that over 1,500 people are experiencing homelessness.
Mm. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people.
It is.
And I'm reading data. I don't know how they come up with these numbers, but there might be as many as 4,000 or 5,000 people in, including families and individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's broken down. I'm insensitive to this, and I admit, I have thought a lot about children that are mm-hmm. unaccompanied by an adult. In fact, I have the New Mexico Dream Center, which actually works with the city and some others to help kids that are being trafficked.
Mm-hmm.
Neat program, but I haven't thought too much about a group of individuals, the LGBTQ community. I didn't realize that there was a large portion of homeless people that are in that community, mm-hmm. and I don't know why, but they may need a little different assistance than typical men and women. Am I wrong about that? I mean, in other words, I know, for example, restroom facilities and things like that might be different. What makes people comfortable?
Well, Christina, maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about what we're thinking for our upcoming Gateway Shelter and how we're going to format that to accommodate more groups of people.
Yeah, that's actually a great question that you ask, and a question that we ourselves are asking is really, as we're building out the Gateway, how are we building services around people, people-based design and trauma-informed design? So a recent report was released just this week, the Lived Experience Report, where we went out into the community with many of our providers, including Casa Q and the Trans Resource Center, to explore that topic and figure out what people needed in the shelter. And so a lot of those elements are now being incorporated into the design of how we're building out the Gateway.
So what is a trauma-informed? I guess maybe we need to ask the question is, what's caused homelessness? There's all kinds of causes, right?
Yes, definitely there are all kinds of causes. And, you know, when we say trauma-informed services, trauma-informed design, we're really asking the question, we're not asking what's wrong with you, we're saying what happened to you?
Mm.
What occurred that led to this point, and how can we design services around that question? So that could be, many multitude factors. One story that I heard recently, that's featured in the Lived Experience Report is, somebody was a UNM art student. They were well on their way to graduating, but a death in their family caused them to become unstable, and that led them to the street. They became depressed and started self-medicating with alcohol, and that just led to an increased cycle where you're living on the street, alcohol, and that can be one of the potential causes of homelessness.
I don't know which of you would like to answer this question, but I'm kind of not, it's not on the list, so I apologize in advance, but I'm listening to what Christina is saying, and just so our listeners know, Dr. Elizabeth Holguin is the Deputy Director of Homeless Solutions, and she's a clinical advisor in her role with the City of Albuquerque. Christina Parajon. Why?
You'll get it.
I'm going to get it. Parajon?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get that. Tell me the etymology. What's the background of your
name? Oh, it's Nicaraguan.
Oh, nice.
I'm from Nicaragua.
I love it. You've got a little R role there that I don't know if I can accomplish, but I'm going to try to.
Thank you.
And then Monica is the public affairs specialist for the City of Albuquerque Family and Community Services. All three ladies here answering questions. So, maybe I'm going to stick to the list, and I'm going to bring up this question in our second segment of this part of the interview with you today. So you've explained what trauma-informed center is, but Christina, I guess I have to ask now, what's happening with the Gateway Center? Obviously, I don't think there's criticisms leveled mm-hmm. yet, because you haven't done the plan is in place and it continues to grow, but there is political stuff, and I personally don't like the political stuff. That's why I'm so blessed that you're here telling us the truth.
Yeah.
What's happening with the Senate?
Absolutely. So we are in the demolition phase right now.
Oh, okay.
So we have already started that construction process. And, you know, I will say, yes, that, you know, we of course want this solution as soon as possible. But we also want to do it right. And we want to make sure that as we're building out the services, they're going to actually transform the people who are coming in. And, that really is what the Gateway Center is. And it sets it apart from a place like the Westside Emergency Shelter, for instance. This is a place where you wake up in the morning and you have a peer support advisor. You have a case manager, you have a housing manager, all these people there that are there to support you, including one thing that's mentioned in the lived experience report a lot is people want connection to spiritual services, and they really see it as a piece in their journey towards accessing, towards becoming whole again. And I will say there are, we also want to also emphasize that there are a lot more. The Gateway is more than just 50 beds for single women. We have a sobering center that has 20 beds and a medical respite center that also has 20 beds. So all in all, that's about 80 beds there for people to access those services, and not just women, men included, for those sobering and medical respite beds.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on, you know, the Westside Shelter does do its job. It's an emergency shelter. It gives people shelter and food, right? But we're trying to make the Gateway much more, as Christina alluded to. And I know that many people were hung up on this 50 women number, which we just want to emphasize again that that is a start, right? And I would like to say that when fully functional, the Gateway Shelter will serve 800 people per year, because that will be, we're going to assume that people will stay for about 90 days. So that's 50 adult single women and men, plus 25 families per quarter. So that comes out, if you think about a family of four, that would be about 800 people a year. In addition, the Medical Sobering Center will serve approximately 7,000 people a year, which are people diverted from emergency rooms. So you'll get your visit sooner for an actual medical cause. And then the medical respite unit will serve from 90 to 180 people per year, depending on their length of stay. So it's really taking a big burden off of our hospital systems and other shelters.
So I've interviewed people from Steelbridge, Joy Junction. I have a quote from Alma Reynolds. She's told us on this show that there are enough beds now available for the homeless population, for everybody right now. And with the Gateway Center, that would be especially true. So the question is, why do we need homeless camps? And why is that happening and so prevalent at like Coronado Park and Roosevelt Park?
Sure. Well, first of all, to clarify, if we go back to that number of about, you know, it's over 1,500 people at any given night are homeless. In any given night of Albuquerque, we have 1,192 shelter beds. So that's actually not enough.
Wow.
And while, again, we recognize that housing is definitely the gold standard ideal solution, not everyone is quite ready for that step, or, you know, we also have a problem with number of units and things in the city, as many cities do. So things like safe outdoor spaces and shelters are a stopgap measure to meet people where they're at and keep them safe for that amount of time that they're in that situation.
So there's a real clear dichotomy between an emergency shelter and just keeping a roof over someone's head, mm-hmm. keeping them off the street.
Mm-hmm.
Scary stuff, frankly, living
right.
on the streets of Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It just is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're talking to law enforcement. In fact, right before you all came on, I had an organization called Stand True for Blue. And all they do is try to encourage law enforcement and first responders, because they're dealing with mm-hmm. trauma every day.
Absolutely.
They're dealing with
yep.
other people's trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Including our homeless population.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a really neat ministry that they're doing. I love the fact that you've come and said, hey, there's 1,192 beds, because that's not enough. And I don't think anybody's malicious about saying what they say, but with the housing opportunities that the city is proposing, I don't know how to say this in a politically correct way, but there's people that are facing mental illness. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's been drug abuse, brain damage, for lack of a better term. I mean, mm-hmm. doctor, I'm not saying things with the medical vernacular that I yeah. should, but there's people that are substance abusers. There's people that have mm-hmm. mental illness. There's people that actually can't take care of themselves. Yes. And then there's people that may be belligerent or refusing. That mm-hmm. maybe they're in an anger phase. I know there's different mm-hmm. phases of trauma and different things that are happening. So with all of the opportunities that the city is providing, are there services, counseling mm-hmm. services, and other things that are included?
Absolutely. And just so people are aware, the city, state, and county are constantly collaborating together to work on behavioral health initiatives and get new facilities up and going. But as far as the gateway, Christina alluded to the fact that we will have peer support workers, which are people that have lived experience. Perhaps they've had behavioral health or substance use disorder that they've overcome successfully. And then they it's sort of if you imagine like a caseworker, but someone who can handhold them through the process to recovery and help them get to their appointments, go with them if needed, just provide that support of someone who's been there. And we'll have a whole entire engagement center, which will have lots of different social services involved there. One of the great benefits of the Gibson Health Hub is that the Gateway Shelter is located in that facility with hospitals like Turquoise Lodge, Zia Behavioral Health, Haven Hospital. So we have a great continuum of care going where, you know, maybe someone would like to go into Turquoise Lodge, but there's no bed yet. Well, they can stay safe in our shelter and then go in. Vice versa, they need to get discharged. Where are they going to go? They don't need to go back out on the streets. They can go to the shelter and get connected with housing.
Yeah.
And I'll also add, in the Gibson Health Hub, what we have operating right now is the Trauma Recovery Center, which is out of Albuquerque Community Safety. So that phase of construction is already complete, and they're already serving people there in the yep. building, serving our community and our homeless community as well.
Very nice. Christina Parón?
Parón.
I still have a couple of tries left, Christina. Yeah. Elizabeth Holguin, Dr. Holguin, and Monica Jamko with the City of Albuquerque. We're going to have them for one more segment. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we are all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Rochelle.
As a leader, I want to encourage you to listen more and talk less. And this is going to be very difficult for many leaders because you like to talk a lot. And the reality is, as leaders, we tend to think that everyone always wants to hear from us, and it is important that they hear from us. But in this season, it's equally important and maybe even more important that you hear from your team, especially with what's all going on in the world right now, because your organizational climate, your team morale, your competition, the broader market, all these things and so many more, they're probably considerably different today than you think that they are. This may not be true everywhere, but I'm guessing for most of you, with your volunteers and your team, that you've got pockets of your team that are healthy, that are performing well. You've got pockets that they may be bleeding out. You've got teams that are in disarray.
That was Craig Rochelle with a KLYT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
Every spring, thousands of people hit the Appalachian Trail, hoping to hike from Georgia all the way to Maine. They know where they're going, and they know it won't be easy. I'm Rob West, and this is a MoneyWise Minute. The AT, as it's called, is a path almost 2,200 miles long, passing through 14 states. To endure all those ups and downs, hikers must plan ahead. They load their food, clothing, and shelter into a backpack, and then they start walking for months toward their destination. We also need to be good stewards and plan ahead for life's hills and valleys while believing that God promises to meet our needs. On your hike through life, let Jesus share your burdens. It might not be easy, but trust Him every step of the way by faith as He guides you toward your final destination, heaven. Discover the best Christian financial articles, podcasts, and videos by visiting our website, moneywise.org, or by downloading MoneyWise Biblical Finance from your app store.
This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
We are in studio this afternoon with Monica Jamko, Elizabeth Holguin, and Christina Parhom.
Yes.
I did it better. They're yeah. still not there, but I'm gonna get there. Beautiful names, by the way. You guys have really unusual names. And you know, New Mexico, I'm used to the Griegos and the Chavises, and of course, my name Williams is like as generic as you can get. You guys have like movie star names. I love it.
We're a diverse group.
Hey, we don't have a lot of time left, so we do want to ask about the zoning changes now in front of the city council for living spaces and safe outdoor spaces. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Sure. So there's many amendments that have been introduced under the umbrella of safe outdoor spaces and what Councilor Brisson is calling living lots, which are spaces that would be sanctioned. Basically, right now what you're seeing are unsanctioned encampments, which are very dangerous, high crime rates, not great stuff going on there, right? Safe outdoor spaces allow for a limited number of people to be in a space in a controlled environment, which would mitigate trash and extra belongings building up. It keeps people safe. There's often fencing, and sometimes people use a doorbell system. There's management and oversight on the camp, either by a security company or by people that have lived experience and are residents there themselves. They provide access to resources like meals, connection to case management, housing, things like that. And under safe outdoor spaces, there's also things called safe parking programs. So like this, I'm happen to see that this campus here is quite large and has a great parking lot. So perhaps the members of this church would like to think about hosting a safe parking program, for example, where we could fence off an area and give people safe places to park so they're not in neighborhoods or in unsafe areas around the highway for those that happen to be living in their car, and get them access to resources and housing pipelines as well as employment.
So I'm going to ask two questions, hopefully, before we run out of time here. We've got about 6 minutes left. How are you hoping to involve the faith-based community, Christina?
Yeah, that's a great question. So definitely if you're interested, you know, in the future when the Gateway does open in the winter of 2022 and want to volunteer there, definitely email gatewayinput@cabq.gov. And that's how we have a running list of organizations already that want to get involved. But right now, churches can do a lot. For instance, Pastor Joanne Landry in the International District has a warming center, and that gives, you know, respite for a lot of people from the cold. And soon now, as it's getting hotter, she has air conditioning in there as well. So really living the word in that way, and faith through actions.
Okay, this is kind of a tough question. It's a listener question. And this came in yesterday after the show yesterday, as I mentioned, with Carla Sontag. Listener says, there are many programs and options available for people experiencing homelessness. Are people living on the street now making a choice to reject the options that are available to them?
Face value, yes, right? But if we dig deeper, we can see that I think there's a false narrative out there that some people don't want housing. Everybody wants a house, mm-hmm. Okay? So let's maybe stop thinking in that direction. And we have organizations I'd like to highlight, Albuquerque Street Connect, who addresses the hardest of the hard cases, the highest utilizers of jails and ERs, and people that often have both medical issues and behavioral health issues co-occurring. So what they do is a really targeted one-on-one approach, and their way of speaking with people and helping them into services is pretty incredible. And so organizations like that are really helping one by one to get the most complex people off the street.
Yeah. And there are some complex cases. Mm-hmm. I mean, no question. But I think a lot of the feedback that you three are getting and the mayor is because the encampments, which Dr. Holguin has already identified as illegal encampments and unhealthy and even unsafe. I mean, I know I used to take my children. I have five children, all grown now, but I used to take them to Roosevelt Park. Mm-hmm. because we used to call it Hill Park, mm-hmm. and it was really beautiful and really nice. And I would be scared to take my grandchildren there because of the encampments and because you find things like syringes and things. And by the way, that's not a comment about the city. The mm-hmm. city, you know, waste management is on the mm-hmm. site every day.
Mm-hmm. As well as parks and recreation.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah, and trying to clean everything and do everything. So are you hopeful that you're going to have more and more positive outcomes as you work through this, Dr. Holge?
Yeah, I think that if we can find a faith-based partner to host our first safe outdoor space and show people that it won't end the world, that they can see and maybe copy or replicate at another site, would be amazing. And then we can start to take our parks back, right? But we need to do it in a logical and safe and controlled manner.
Now, I don't know the details about this, but the city built some tiny homes.
That's the counties.
Oh, that's the counties. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they haven't been utilized because people don't qualify. They're still drug addicted and stuff. I kind of see this as a process. Do you see outcomes happening where those homes will be utilized?
Well, yes. The county is working very hard right now to reevaluate their admission criteria, and they are expecting to fill the tiny homes in the next month or so.
Is there just an absolute known solution to all of this, or we just got to work through it together?
We got to work through it together, Jim. That's why we have our multifaceted framework, and I like to just talk about things all along the spectrum, and we have to meet people where they're at and just try to improve that piece of the spectrum.
Yeah. Do you guys have in your jobs the ability to say, maybe not to the mayor himself, but to at least his advisors and things, this is what we need to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I mean,
and this administration is actually very unique in such that they're not afraid to try, right? We just want to try and evaluate. We say we can try projects on the smallest scale possible, see if they make a positive impact, and then we can either scale up or pivot from there. But the bottom line is that the community needs to be open to trying solutions.
I love that. And Monica, yes. In the background of all of this is the public affairs specialist. You have to let the people that need the services know about it. And you need to speak to our listeners, too, about how they can help.
Yes, that's true. So it's an ongoing question as to how best to reach people who need these kinds of services. I think through some of our collaboration with other city departments like Parks and Rec and ACS, we try to get the word out that way directly to folks. And we're updating our website. Social media is a big way to get information. Please follow us on
One more
media.
Time, your website and phone number.
CABQ.gov. You can always find a lot of information that way. Social media is the best way.
Best way.
Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Ladies, thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.